Namaste and welcome everybody to this week's class on the topic of fear based upon the new book that's coming out in the Living Wisdom series with Paramahansa Yogananda on how to overcome fear. And I'd like to begin this week's class with a short prayer. Divine Mother, beloved Guru, may we walk ever in thy light, facing all obstacles, all difficulties, with thy presence within. Where can fear be when you are beside me, when you are within me? Om Shanti Shanti Amen Om Guru. Now, I've asked Bharat to, and I don't know if Shamini, they're good Shamanis there with him. The two of them to please start us out with the song. This is a chant actually, and this is one of the ones I particularly like, and the last lines of this chant kept resonating in my mind, and so I asked them to please sing this one for us today to get us started. So I'll hand it over to you.
Desire, my great enemy, with his soldiers surrounding me, is giving me lots of trouble, oh my Lord. Is giving me lots of trouble, oh my Lord. That enemy I will deceive, remaining in the castle of peace, night and day in thy joy, O my Lord, night and day in thy joy, O my Lord, night and day in thy joy, O my Lord, night and day in thy joy, O
Thank you, Shamini, and thank you, Bharat, for that. You won't have to fear anything anymore. And this really is the message that we want to convey. We can talk about fear. We can talk about all the things that cause it. We can talk about courage. And today we're going to talk about being non-attached. But the question really is here, what do we do about it? And I think for those of us who are disciples, for those of us who practice Kriya Yoga, this, in a sense, is the answer. As Lahiri Mahashaya said, solve all problems with Kriya Yoga. And I think those of you who are Kriyabans know that this is the answer. We're being able to, you could say, remain in all circumstances and all trials, remain in that castle of peace. But I was thinking, like, as I said, I was thinking about this topic today, non-attachment. And I, if you remember back in the first week when we were talking about fear, I used that story of the priest in Korea and the general and the total non-attachment, the fearlessness that was he displayed in that moment of trial and difficulty, and how to get that, and what is the quality. And that quality, really, he's demonstrating it there, is total non-attachment to things of this world. Being able to, you could say, face any troubles and trials, because he's not glued, you might say, to this world. And so I'd like to talk about that a little bit. And because that's really what we are. We're glued to this world. We're stuck with it, glued to our desires. We're glued to our, those things we want. We're glued to our fears even. And somehow our worries, all of these things. And how do we unstick ourselves? You could say we're attached to them. And I was thinking of this image as I was pondering this. I was thinking this image of, you know, and actually I have on my hand, I have a little bandage because I ended up cutting myself, which is not easy. And so I put a little bandage on it, Band-Aid on it. And it, of course, very easy to take off. But sometimes you get on parts of your body, you get a more serious cut and you put this bandage on the cut, you protect it, and then you have to take it off. That's usually the painful part. Rip that bandage off and you, ouch, that hurts. And in a sense, that's it is. When we become attached to things, to get detached, you know, that's where it's painful, and we don't want to detach ourselves because that seems like it's going to be, it's brought to our attention, you might say. Of course, nowadays they make these bandages that are supposedly non-painful to take off. But I was thinking about this, and then, you know, this is all very theoretical. And that too reminded me of the story that Swami Kriyananda used to speak about. Now, it's not exactly about non-attachment, but I think the image fits. And he was saying that there's people in the healing trades and, they would say, it's just, you're sick, you're in pain, you need to be healing. It's all in your mind. It's all in your mind. And so this one lady went to one such fellow, and she was suffering from a pain of one sort or another. And it was very, very painful for her. And the doctor, the healing doctor, would say, you shouldn't worry about these things so much. It's just all in your mind. And he kept going on like this and going on like that. And finally, the lady got quite frustrated because she was in pain. And so she takes off her shoe and she takes the shoe and the heel of the shoe and she whaps the guy on the head. And he goes, ouch, ouch, that hurt. What did you do that for? She says, don't bother, don't bother. It's all in your mind. And so it's the same way we can approach some of these topics philosophically. Oh, don't be attached. It's all in your mind. It's all in your... But what do we do about it, really? Because, I mean, we have to, of course. We have to have practical solutions. But it's, you know, when you're in the grip, and particularly if you apply this to a topic, what we're speaking about here in this series, about fear, you have fears. You have worries. And if somebody comes out, it's all in your mind, just be non-attached. Well, it's easy for them to say, but if you're attached, you're still. What do you do about it? And I think this is what we have to come up with solutions. That's why I wanted Bharan Chamani to. And this is an ultimate solution, being able to basically see, on a deeper, you might say, spiritual level, the prana, where our true self lies. But that's, that is truly the answer that we're seeking, that our freedom lies in God and becoming one with God. But between now and then, we do need to have, you might say, suggestions on how we might approach that ideal. And pain and worry and fear, you could say they're attached to, because of our basic attachment to this body. The body is threatened. It's instinctual. It's instinctual for me to protect myself. I mean, that's where it's built in. You know, don't touch the fire. Watch out for the wild animals, or don't fall off the cliff, and you know, all of these sorts of things. It's instinctual. But there are many of the fears that we have, I think, day to day. We're not worried about tigers in the jungle so much. And, you know, most of us don't do life-threatening jobs, you know. But most of the fears that we, if we look inside, what are we really afraid of? And what do we fear? And they're not of that nature. When they come, well, then fear plays its role. Be careful, you know, crossing the street for little children. But most of our fears have to do with, you might say, if you trace it back, it's something to do with the ego. We have fears are related to protecting ourselves. And when we say ourselves, we're not so much talking about the body, our personality, our ego identity, our pride, our enthusiasms, our desires. Those are, and for example, take criticism, for example. People don't like it, and they don't want to do anything that other people, they might criticize them for. So, I'm not going to say that. I'm afraid to say that, or afraid to do that. Somebody might criticize me. Or you find, so you protect yourself in that way. Now, whether it's not a matter of whether the criticism is true or untrue, it's how it attacks us. Or somehow we feel a sense of ego diminishment from people look askance at us, or we don't measure up, we don't think we measure up, all of these sorts of things that are, we're worried. We get in front of the camera here and oops, did I forget to, you know, to comb my hair? Probably not. But then these sorts of things that we think, how do I look? How do I appear to the world at large? Will I get that job? Will I lose it? Where am I on the pecking order of status in this world? These sorts of things, insecurities, I go on and on. These are the things I think people are mostly fearful of. And if you trace those back, it goes back to what I would call ego protectiveness. And isn't this really what, if we study the scriptures, if we take, and is being said in the Bhagavad Gita right at the very beginning, what did they on the battlefield of life? And if we know right there at the very beginning, when it's being related of the armies of the Kauravas, the armies of the Pandavas, that it shows that Duryodhana is saying, their army is limited. My army, our army is unlimited. We're vast, much more vast. And it's led by the great general Bhishma. And of course, as we're advised or taught, Lahiri Maharshi, when he expounded on the Gita and passed down to us through our gurus, that Bhishma represents or is symbolic for ego. And Duryodhana says, at all costs, we must protect Bhishma, and that all the soldiers, he's saying, all the other qualities, that's your first duty, protect Bhishma. And in a sense, it's this ego protectiveness, and that, oh my gosh, Bhishma is going to be threatened. Then it engenders fear. And we find that ourselves that, you know, this is the whole, you might say, the battle that we faced. And if you take, there's so many of them, but I just use this one criticism first, that why do we react? Why do we react when we're criticized? Somebody's pointing something out, well, we don't like it because maybe, and then mostly we don't like it because maybe it's true. Or there's some, or we're insecure that it might be true. Now, if somebody gives you criticism that's totally outrageous, that, you know, you don't feel quite so threatened by it. You know that, you know, it makes you look bad maybe, and you kind of react to that. But I think it's usually that criticism that is pointing out something, oh, you know, maybe there's something there. And we don't like it ourselves, perhaps, or it's we feel a sense we failed in some way. And it's diminished. Swami Kriyananda, you know, sometimes he would address this topic, and he says, but it's a good exercise. Watch yourself when you're criticized, because the ego is being attacked. Can you take it cheerfully? And it doesn't matter whether it's fair or not. It's not the point here of the spiritual lesson to be able to take criticism gracefully, and maybe even in our mind to say something, oh, thank you for pointing that out. I'm going to try to now that I know about it, a little bit reminded of that, I'm going to do better. How many people say that? Not too many. You know, but I think the first lesson there is don't react to it. You know, of course you react maybe inwardly. Don't outwardly react to it. The worst thing you probably do is you start outwardly and you get back to that other person and you get in an argument and you just dig yourself in deeper. And you start off, you're criticized. And it's not, sometimes there are occasions when you have to point out that the little bit, there's a little error here. Maybe I wasn't the culprit after all. But that's really not the point here. The point is, how do you feel about it? What does it do inside of you, that reactive tendency? And what is the nature of that? That's the reactive tendency that we, if we can learn to overcome that and take and depersonalize it, say, oh, well, maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong, but not have that reaction. This is where we begin to be less ego protective, and to the degree that we can learn to minimize that ego protectiveness in all things in life, the less we're going to be fearful. The ego gets to the point where it's accepting and not, it doesn't need any protection. When you don't need any protection, you take the fences down. When the fences are down, you know, the horizon is of your life is now expanded. Your little world blocked in, not just by a fence, but maybe by a big stone wall. All of a sudden, there's a sense of expansion. And basically, to overcome fear is not to become contractive, but it's to become expansive. And that expansiveness comes, in this case, and I'm saying ego protection, but that's just an aspect of not being attached to the ego, because when there's no attachment there, it's not necessarily to be defended. And so now this, I just use criticism, but there's many, many others, and we could may have a whole class series on those. But it's those egoic sides of ourselves that we need to protect. Fear, in some way, for most things in life. Now, there are life-threatening things. That's fear of the body and attachment to the body itself. Those, you might say, a little bit more instinctual. And yes, we get to the point where we overcome those. But they come naturally. You don't have to work on not being afraid of tigers. Those sorts of fears will naturally begin to take care of themselves if we can learn to take down the walls of protecting the ego. And so this is what the lesson is here. But now people, sometimes they make a mistake here. They think, oh, well, that means I shouldn't care. Oh, I'm not going to protect my, I'm just going to, I don't care. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that at all. And the spiritual teachings don't say put out less energy because then you don't have to worry, don't care about the results of anything. We care because we want to do a good job. We want to serve a higher purpose. There's a higher purpose for why we act. And if we don't do a good job, well, we haven't, you might say, graduated to be able to put that aside. And so we want to, if we're in a serviceful position, serving other people, serving guru, I want to do a good job. Not for my own ego enhancement, because if it's worth doing, why not do it? Even if you do it badly, you know, it's better to do something and try and maybe fail at it, but at least you're trying for it. So it doesn't mean we put out less energy. And I think when we get over the sense of ego action, we actually have a chance to do it even better, because we're freed, you might say. We're free to express without that fear. Oh, maybe I'm doing the wrong thing. Maybe I'm doing that. Now, I'm not saying to be mindless, you know, there's always a nitpicker. I'd say, well, what about this and what about that? And I can't, you know, time allowed to go into every circumstance. But the other thing is also, there's another aspect. I'm going to read a quote here from Swami Kriyananda, because I want to get it right, is that, and this is particularly sometimes those who practice yoga and are spiritual path, and take a negative point of view on this. And because, as I was saying, as we take the walls down, we want to be expansive. We will be expansive. Non-attachment leads to an expanded state of consciousness. Protectiveness does the opposite. But as Swamiji says here, I want to read. He says, many yoga practitioners concentrate only on the negative aspects of non-attachment. They hold themselves aloof from others and from the concern of others. Well, you know, he doesn't say that. I'm paraphrasing. He's, you know, oh, it doesn't matter what they think, you know, because I'm not going to be worried about their comments and their, you know, I'm above it all. I'm not attached to it all. They take that in a negative way. He says, and from the concerns of others, when non-attachment is limited to this rejecting frame of mind, it may easily develop into spiritual pride. What the devotee must learn is to balance his non-attachment with compassion, lest he end up practicing non-attachment toward others instead of non-attachment toward himself. Isn't that interesting? Non-attachment to others. Now, isn't it this what we've done? Don't be attached, and it can be easily applied. Don't be attached to what others think. In other words, now that's not quite true. You see, we're attached to truth, and it's compassion for others. Because obviously, if other people are hurt, if other people are injured, we don't want to do that. We don't want to do it. But it's non-attachment to ourselves, our ego, that we're talking about here. Because otherwise, we run into this problem of spiritual pride. And you do see this sometimes in some people on the spiritual path. I'm not attached, you know, and so consequently, what happens to others is none of my concern. But no, it should be. And what happens to me is not so much my concern. You know, don't be attached to that. And we do, because this is why we try to do a good job. We try to be compassionate. We try to be expansive in our action. We try to reach out. It's the positive things we have to concentrate. But that reactive process of my own little self being the beneficiary, and this is the essence of also nishkam karma, is the fruits of action. I want to see the fruits of action benefited for other people and the service is a good thing. But it doesn't come back to me. It doesn't need to come back to me. And that's where I free myself, you see, from that bondage. That bandage is not going to stick when it's pulled off. And this is a very subtle point, but it's something for us to keep in mind, that balance between those. And I want to read a quote here also from Master. He says, attachment to the body is the nest of all our misery. A little cold, a little headache, a little anger, and so on. We are visitors here, and we must behave like visitors. We must be brave. We must not be like crybabies. Non-attachment to the body is what makes one a master. Don't be crybabies, you know, that's the thing. Anyway, the story of Master I so much like, where one of his, in 1920s, I probably was, and one of his, maybe 30s, one of his students bought him a very expensive overcoat and a hat to match it. very fine material. And Master was said, no, 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 that's too much, too nice. And he said, no, no, I really want to give this to you. And so Master says, okay, well, you know, it's for his benefit. I take this nice coat and hat. And I think there's even that some of the pictures you see, photos of him from that age, he's wearing this very nice overcoat. And so what happens is, but he kind of felt a little, but this is really overdoing it a little bit. It's really too nice, you know. And he kind of asked Divine Mother, he says, why don't you do so, help me with this, you know, this. And so he went out to some engagement, perhaps it was out to a dinner. And he, you know, you go into the lobby and you're going to go to dinner and you check your coat and hat and accoutrements at the desk there. And they put it in the closet or in the wardrobe. And so he did that with his coat, and he took care, make sure he was inspired to take everything out of the pockets, and he went to dinner, and he came out to get his coat back, and it had been stolen. It had been stolen. It was a very expensive coat, very, very nice coat. And he said, thank you, Divine Mother. You've solved my problem. And he says, but one thing, you forgot to take the hat. And I think this is how we want it. In a sense, if we can go through life in this way, he loved, you know, though he took care of that coat, he took care of that hat, and be a steward. We're given things in this life, but don't let it be glued to you. It's going to come, and eventually it's going to go. Same with this body. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit about leaving the body and not being attached, death, fear of death that many people have. But let me give, I want to share with you a few, what do we do about all this? Here's some exercises about non-attachment that Master offered up and also that Swami offered up. And he says, look around you, look at your home, go home, look around you. And what in this home is really, really yours? It's really on loan, isn't that true? It's on loan. We think it's ours, but really life has given us and you know to us to take care of, to do, and we're become a, take that attitude of becoming a steward of all those material things. And we tend to think this is mine, that's mine. You know, you're gonna have to leave everything someday. It's gonna be inevitable. Maybe it's at the final exiting here, or, you know, you're going to find yourself, I've moved many times. And when you move, you have to pack up and go to a new place. And isn't that usually the case? Half the stuff, you just say, I get rid of it. I don't need that anymore. It's a good exercise every year. Go through. We have, it was recommended here by one of the Nayaswamis here. He says, go through your closet once a year. And if you haven't used something for at least a year, unless there's some other extenuating circumstance, why not just give it away? And this, because it's just sitting there. But we're attached to it. I've got books on my bookshelf I never look at, but yet I keep it. And now, you know, a few of those are okay, but how many things in your life? Look around, let it go. Look at your clothes. What about the body too, in some form? It's a form of clothing too. Ultimately, it's gonna have to go. How about your talents? Your intelligence, your qualities, do they really belong to you? You're stewards of them. They've been given to you to use properly, but don't get attached to them. And you see, in other words, since Swami used to have this, he liked nice things. He had a very fine taste in art, fine taste of everything in his life. And when he would see something really nice, you know, he'd be on as many of his travels, he'd see something really beautiful. He wanted to buy it. He said, oh, you know, look at that. It's so nice. You know, and there's this, we want to possess this world because we're attracted to it. And he could just, of course, his yogic sense say, no, no, not this, not that, leave it be. But he found a nice solution, which he suggested. He said, why not, if you can, it's not, you know, beyond your means. He says, why not buy it? Take it for a little while, enjoy it, and then give it away to somebody. He says, this way, you enjoy it twice, once in the buying and once in the giving. He says, you get double the pleasure. And it reminded me of how Master had, as a young man, he had a student, he had that motorcycle, beautiful motorcycle. And he would even say, there's some photos of him driving Sri Yukteswar in the sidecar. He had a sidecar to it. And then one day he was looking out the window and his motorcycle was down there on the roadway. And he saw another young man who was admiring it. Really just, you know, he could see that he really was liking that motorcycle. So he went out and he said, "It's a nice motorcycle, isn't it?" And the young fellow said, "Oh, it's wonderful. Oh, if only I could have something like that." And Master immediately, he says, you want it? He says, "Oh, I wish I had one." He says, "Here, I'll give it to you." I went and got the keys and gave it to him. He says, but the fellow said, but he says, no, go ahead and take it. It's yours. You know, and in a sense, in his mind, Master, I think what he was saying, he says, Divine Mother had given that to him, and he had this premonition that this would be better served. This gift would be perhaps served this person for whatever reason, and he gave it away. And then Swamiji was often that way because he was often given many, many gifts, and then he would just give them away. And Master was the same way. People, things would come to him because naturally he gained gifts, Christmas, birthdays, those sort of things, and he would enjoy them. You might say, put his vibrations, and then he would give them away. And I think those things are very sweet. People receive it. I remember Swamiji giving Sadhanadevi and me a very nice vase. It wasn't simple, but it was very tasteful, nice vase. And now I look at always, I've kept that vase. I don't know if I'm attached to it or not, but but it reminds me. It reminds me of Swamiji, and it was very nice. And so he, again, another piece of advice is when people praise you, but find some way of, try to find some way of deflecting that praise. Oh, God is the doer. And, you know, rather than sort of hoarding it to yourself, if any project you undertake, imagine failing at it. What happened? It's kind of the what if situation. What if this should happen? What if this worry should come true? How would I feel? That's a hard one sometimes, because then you can imagine quite very difficult things, painful things. But if you imagine it and say, okay, this life comes, this life goes, these things happen, Lord, I'm free, I'm with you. And I think this is the secret of being able to deal with pain, particularly pain of loss, pain of these, whether it's something personal, other people, is you realize these things have defined my happiness by these things outside myself. What is my true, where does my true happiness lie? And you could sort of say, yes, I know I've got to die someday. And so all this, you know, it's sort of a low energy way of looking at it. And I'm not suggesting that. You might say it stimulates us to love God even more right now. Because Lord, you are my solace. You are my treasure. And then if to the degree that you love God more, why settle for trinkets, you see? And so it's a stimulus, you might say. And you find, I have found, and this is, I think all the great ones have recommended this, to the degree you love God, nothing else matters. You don't care about other stuff anymore. And this is how you really approach life. I love God more and more and more, and everything else becomes, you might say, stale cheese. That's why his master would put it. He says, when you once taste good cheese, you don't want stale cheese anymore. And this is how we approach life, looking for where our true happiness really lies. And it doesn't mean you become indifferent. You see, now how do we do this? Because you see in everything in life, there's some aspect of God's reflection in that. And we approach that. And as we do that, we become less attached to it, less fearful of it. If it's taken away, God, I'm with you. You cannot, if you have God, nothing to fear anymore. Nothing can be taken with you. And you could, so a practice that's often recommended is when you go to sleep at night, every night before you fall asleep, just mentally review. And Swamiji would say, build a bonfire in your meditation at night. Build a mental bonfire and cast into it, you know, all your possessions, your furniture, your clothing, your car, all of these things. Just sort of, you know, mentally letting it go. It's your God. And you could sort of, you know, even so, you could offer up your attachment to other people. Now, again, we're not talking indifference here, compassion, but that attachment to that I, somehow they belong to me. They're mine. They're not yours. Cut those strings. And your attachments to town, your country, to your identity. What is your, what, how do you identify yourself? I'm a this, I'm a that. Your beliefs. Offer them up into the flames of every desire. You could sort of your, all the self definitions, casting them into the flames, and go down that mental list. And you'll find that when all is said and done, I think the best way to be non-attached is to become super attached to God. We become super attached to God. You don't want anything anymore. Cultivate that love as a supreme, you might say, the supreme goal. That love, that joy, whatever little experience you have, puff on it so that it grows into a mighty flame. And then you won't need to fear the loss of anything anymore. Night and day, in thy Lord, in thy joy, Lord, night and day. God, you see, is your solace. God is your companion. God is the doer of everything. So let's end on that note. Next week, I'd like to come back and I'd like to address something specific. That's the fear of death. Because ultimately, that's, as Swami Kriyananda said, that's the final exam of our spiritual, you might say, our spiritual endeavors. And we want to pass that exam with flying colors. God bless all of you. And until next week, joy to you.